Welcome to the show, guys. This is Mahmoud, your host of Plays with Mahmoud, and today is actually the last day of Next Angle series, basically. Now, I actually wanted to make the podcast in just one niche and one category to serve one type of people. I know I'm pretty sure you all enjoyed it, and I try to cover different topics, but yeah. So, for the past 12 to 13 weeks, I've been posting the Next Angle series, also the Entrepreneurship and Gamble series, twice per week if I include both the Entrepreneurship and Gamble and the Next Angle series. Now, it will be a bit different these days, in the upcoming weeks. We will still be uploading twice a week. The days are on Tuesdays and Fridays, hopefully. And that's what I wanted you guys to know. And so today's episode is all about mental health, and this is, I think, a very important topic we need to talk about. And today's guest is Alan Stevens. He is actually an international profiling coach and communication specialist, and frequently featured on national radio and in world press. He's been profiling the leading politicians, TV sports stars, as well as Britain royalty. He will again be here on the show, but on that episode, he will be talking about profile, seeing people and understanding them. But today we are going to discuss mainly about all the things related to mental health. And he has an amazing project called the Campfire Project, and we are going to get into that. And I hope you learn a lot from this, and I hope to stay with you guys for long. And that's it. So let's get started with this episode.
Pretty good about it, because I'm looking forward to having a chat with UAM. So I'm here today.
Okay, please tell us now, how did everything got started for you, and why did you started working on mental health, and why is it actually important for anyone?
Well, one of the things I realized, see, as a profiler, working with people, helping them to understand their personalities and how to read other people, talking to a lot of businesses, I realized that they needed to, men in particular, didn't know their role at home and didn't know their role at work with all the gender issues and everything else. But that sort of came about from my own personal experiences. I grew up as a boy, lived with my mother and sister. My father died when I was 3, so I didn't have any male role models around me. So very much a lonely child, kept most of the time, mostly to myself most of the time. And as I grew up, I looked at, well, where do I head to from here? I joined our national telephone carrier and started working with them. I trained and then was put in charge of men who were all older than me. So I was 23 and my second in charge was 38. So working with the rest of the staff as well who were older than me, one guy had actually been one of my seniors in Sydney when I lived down in when I first did my training. And so now I'm the youngest and I've got all these men who are older than me. I had to get them on side. So that was another area that gave me a lot of stress as well. I realized I needed to learn how to read people as I went along. Then in my mid-30s, I decided to join the surf club and become a surf lifesaver. And in that process, I went through my training and they got me to be a patrol captain where everybody was... had been there longer than I had been, but they put me in charge of a patrol, mainly because I got all the kids that nobody else wanted. We turned that into patrol of the year, which led me to be the club captain after that, and then the zone supervisor looking after 3 major beaches. And in that process, I am the same age as everybody, but as they pointed out, I was the least experienced. So now I'm in a position where I've got all these people around me that I've got to give directions to, and I had to get them on side when a lot of them didn't think that I was up to scratch, that I didn't have enough knowledge. And in my late 30s, my first wife left and I had 3 boys to raise on my own. They were 4, 11 and 12 years old. So, from being the youngest in business to being the least experienced in the surf club and then having 3 boys to raise, through all of my life, I've had a lot of pressure. And one of the things I'd been fairly lucky about was always being able to keep that controlled. But I knew a lot of men around me were going through a lot of pressure. And that's why I decided to create the Campfire Project. Create it so it was a safe place where men could come and tell their stories and give themselves permission to do that. and for me and other people to just sit and listen to their stories, hold space for them, because I realized that was important for people to be able to do if they were going to control their mental health issues. And that's been the progression for me, and the Campfire Project now has become one of my major programs.
So when did you started the Campfire Project?
The Campfire Project started about 2.5 years ago. Now I'm 69 now, but I went through a lot of things in my 50s, looking at bringing boys into manhood through Aboriginal communities and through their culture, and then helping good men to become better. And so I thought, right, spending a lot of time, if you sit around a campfire with other men and you have conversations, it's surprising how deep you get into those conversations and how well you connect. And I realized that most men were like me when I was a boy. They didn't have anybody else to talk to, and they're going through all this frustration, and that frustration was giving attention to them. So 2.5 years ago, I started it with, first of all, with interviewing men one-on-one and then bringing men into discussions where we'd have four of us on screen, on Zoom, like the two of us are here today, and talking about all sorts of subjects. And that's worked really well for the men to be able to work through issues they had, but also to create friendships and bonds that they didn't have before. So it's been a busy 2 years, 2.5 years.
True. It must have been busy for you. However, like, I've got this question. So is any kind of mental health can be like, can any type of mental health be genetic? Or is it all because of other factors like our environment and all?
There's always going to be some that are passed down in the genes from the parents, you know, as you say, genetic ones. Because I know in all the research the psychologists did about 10, 15 years ago, they were talking about how 1% of the population fitted into the psychopath role. And then within business, it was about 4% in leadership roles. It just meant that leadership roles attracted those sort of people. So you have those at one extreme. But the majority of issues that we're having today, the mental health issues, are the pressures of life. You know, men all the way through were being told to suck it up, be tough, you know, keep your emotions down, you know, put up a brave face and just get out there and do it. And we did that for a long time. But when you're doing that all the time, it takes a burden and it really wears people down. And it's like, it's almost like water torture. You're under, you know, the water just drips away and drips away, and it finally wears the rock away, for instance. And that's virtually what happens to a lot of men. Because I know in Australia, we have about 8 people per day. Well, before COVID, we had 8 people a day committing suicide. 6 out of every 8 were men. So 3/4 of the successful suicides in Australia were males. And so there's also ages that this hits as well. We've got boys between the age of 15 and 19. The highest youth suicide rate that we have. But then the next area where it hits is in the men around the mid-30s to mid-40s, and then men who are over 80. So a lot of the suicide attempts are all about the pressure that men have been through and not having someone they can talk to. And especially if you look at the elderly, like the men who are over 80, a lot of their mates have passed away. Right? They've no longer got a partner. They're on their own. And they're totally isolated. And everybody now, having been through COVID, will have an understanding of what that isolation is like and the impact that has on your thinking. And so I think a lot more people might understand mental health issues and be a little bit more sympathetic or understanding towards it now after we've been through COVID.
So what are the negative stereotypes connected to mental health counseling? Now, because of COVID and all, people are suffering from mental health issues. Like, not just COVID, but a lot of reasons, people are suffering from mental health, and they are not seeking help from experts. And okay, not just experts, but anyone who can actually help them. So what's stopping them from taking that action and standing up saying, hey, I need help?
Well, even though we've been talking, I don't know what it's like over there, but here in Australia, we talk a lot more about mental health and how it's not an illness. It's a fact of life. But we've still got that old programming where we're being told, as I said, men, you know, you've got to be tough and everything else, to admit that you're going through stress. In my early 30s, I was going through a lot of stress at that time. And when I'd mentioned it to some of the people around me, especially the men, they just shut down. They didn't want to know about it because it's something that, in men in particular, we've been told to control our emotions, and now we've been told by our partners, our women, that we should be more open and be more expressive. We should feel our emotions more. We should show it. But we've been well and truly trained from early age not to show it. So there's that stigma. You know, if you talk about your mental health, you must be weak. But really, we've found in the Campfire Project, the men who have come forward and told their stories, it's taken a huge amount of strength and courage for them to do that. And so, you know, we hold it as a very high responsibility of ours to hold that space for them and make it easy for them to actually open up. And when they do open up, you can just see the weight going off their shoulder. You know, they just, they're smiling a lot more. They're a lot happier. They're connected. The conversations they have are a lot more open. And so that's where we need to go. But the stigmas have always been that if you've got mental health issues, then you're ill. You're not up to scratch. You're not as good as other men. And in fact, both men and women across the planet are going through a lot of stress, and COVID's really hit us hard. And I think that hopefully that will remove some of the stigmas that we've had.
I completely agree with that statement, because it actually really takes a lot of courage to say, I have a mental health issue, like I am suffering mentally. So the question here is, what can we do other than just the space, creating a space for them, to basically empower them to take the step to say, hey, I need help, mental health, like help with my mental health. So what can we do in this case? How can you help them, both the men and the women?
Well, the best way to do it is to have some integrity, be honest when you're talking to them and show them that, yes, you know, there shouldn't be a stigma around this. It affects everybody. You know, everybody who's susceptible to it. And those that are going through it, even the ones that aren't going through it, they're still suffering from it because their family, the people around them are going through it. If somebody takes their life, that affects the whole family. It affects their immediate community. If it's a school child, for instance, that affects everybody in the school. So when they realize that they might be in their own boat, but we're all in the same ocean together. And when they realize that, if we are like little boats in a big ocean, get pushed all over the place. But when you bring the boats together and you strap them together, then you've got a stronger platform. And that's the thing I've been trying to get across to people is, okay, if you're going through things, find people around you who will listen, who are understanding, understand the need to just hold space and listen to you and say that it's okay to have mental health issues. They're there to support you. And in those conversations, I'll let that person then express themselves so that they can work through them. So it's, first of all, and that's what the Campfire Project did. It just proved that there was a safe place, and make sure that other people, if you are getting someone to open up and that person's opening up with you, just watch who else is listening as well, and make sure that anybody else who's involved, who's sitting around when they're talking, protect the person who's talking from anybody who just doesn't understand and tries to get smart about things. So it's being supportive. It's being open. As I always say to people, you've got, I know people will say you've got two ears and one mouth, use them in that proportion. I go, you've got two ears and you've got two eyes and one mouth. The amount of information you can pick up by watching people you'll pick up and be able to pick the, realize what their emotions are really telling you. So if somebody is really down, they're not telling anybody about things, they're feeling a little bit depressed, or even greater to the point of wanting to, are suicidal. If you observe and look for changes, the end result is you can pick a lot of things up before that person gets to the point of actually taking their life. And just being there for people is the major thing. Just hold their space and be honest and listen.
So what are the signs that we can see notice to understand that the other person has missed some mental health issues? Maybe they're depressed or something. So how can we know that?
Well, look for any mood changes. Somebody who is normally very happy and all of a sudden gets quiet, they pull back, they're a little bit reserved, they don't seem to be hearing everything that's being said. They seem to be, it's like the old saying, the lights are on but no one's home. You look at their face and they just don't seem to be connected to things. The other thing to be careful of is somebody who is over happy. If it hasn't been their nature all the way through and all of a sudden they're starting to be extra happy, it can be that they're putting a mask in place and there's a lot going on underneath the surface, but they're giving everybody else the appearance that they're happy. So it's looking for changes in behavior is one of the things. How they respond in conversations. Do they engage in just talking about idle chit chat and, joking and other things, and just how well they respond to things. Now, if they start drinking more excessively, they're more, vocal when they're out in groups, they get louder and everything else, then something's going on. So changes in moods, changes in physiology, changes in the things they're talking about, the desire to get involved in things or the lack of desire to get involved in things that they used to like getting involved in, all of those indicate, just look for changes.
Are there any other, let's say, signs or anything that helps us to understand that the other person is in depression or like suffering from mental health issues, other than just the sudden change in their behavior? So in our first conversation, we talked a lot about like the personalities or like the face, the expressions, the micro expression or like the micro signs in the face. So can you just tell me about like what are the signs that can you look for in a person?
We'll break it down into
the physical appearance,
the features, the expressions, and then the body language.
He has some mental health issues.
If we look at the facial features, what we'll find is that the eyes are a really great indicator of what's going on. As I say, the windows are the eyes are the windows to the soul, what the person's really feeling. When you look at somebody, you've got everything from being really sparkly and alive and everything else to the average person that you meet on the street. But then you've got that appearance in the eyes where the person is just fatigued. They're tired. And you'll see, as I said, it's like looking at them. The lights are on inside, but nobody's home. They're not really connected to what's going on around them. But there are two levels of stress after that. And the colored section of the eye, the iris, one of the things that will happen when somebody's had long-term stress, the irises will actually shrink in size. There is a physical condition that causes the irises to shrink, but there's also this stress condition as well. And if the iris gets smaller, then you notice that there's something going on. And usually one iris will get smaller before the other one does. It's what I call causality. This is where somebody is more likely to have accidents. They're accident prone. Their vision has actually changed because the irises, one iris is taking in light different to the other one. And so they might look over their shoulder. If they're driving a car, they're about to pull out into the roadway. They look over their shoulder. They think it's clear. They drive out and they get hit by another car. That's because their mind's not there. They're not seeing things properly. If they're working on machinery, they're the ones that are likely to have an accident while they're working on machines. So that's the first level. This is where the person is definitely life's really bad. It's been getting them down. This is where they can be suicidal. The next level after that is when the other iris shrinks in size as well. So you've got two little small irises. In sales, they used to say that if you had a salesman who had small irises, in other words, beady eyes, they look like little beads, you can't trust them. Well, the whole thing is that somebody's through that second level of stress. Life has been rubbish. It's been bad, and it's never going to change. That's their belief system. You know, I might as well just put up with what I've got. It's what we call melancholy. They close down. And this is why they say in sales, you can't trust them, because they don't open up. What they do is they don't trust us. They don't trust anyone around. They're going through a lot and they just quieten down. So if you do have somebody who's got really small irises, outside of, first of all, having that medical condition, a physical condition, then find out if they haven't got that, then okay, there could be some levels of stress. But instead of asking, well, have you got a physical issue with your eyes, or are you depressed? What you actually do is you start talking to them and you try and find out what's going on in their life. How are things going? Listen to the responses. And that's when you start to pick up those other things. So that's the actual feature on the face. The other thing is the expressions, because everything we feel inside, we express outwardly. Now, when we do that and anything happens around us, unconsciously, we respond in that moment. And then our conscious mind steps in and tries to cut it off. So what we have, what we call micro expressions. They're as fast as a fifth of a second to 1/25th of a second in speed. Something happens, we react, the expression appears on our face. We consciously then recognize what's going on, and we shut the emotion down, and we shut down the indicator on our face. So you're looking for, there's about seven expressions: anger, contempt, disgust, happiness, sadness, fear and surprise. If anybody feels any one of those emotions, they will express the particular expression on their face. So if they're feeling angry, they will have the angry expression on their face. So what you're looking for is, are the expressions you're getting congruent with what you expect? Are they in context with the conversation you're having? And you look for a number of them together. So look for clusters. So if you say to somebody, you know, they're talking about a friend of theirs, and all of a sudden you see, and you're talking about how their friend has just found a new partner, they're happy and everything else, and you see a little look of sadness on their face, you know they're not happy about their friend finding joy, which could be the fact that they're reflecting on the fact that they've got no joy in their life. So you can use the facial expressions to pick information up. Body language, well, how are they standing? What's their body posture like? If you're feeling really happy and everything else, and you feel vibrant, you're going to stand with your shoulders back, your chest out and everything else. Try and stand like that. This is a test for everybody who's listening to this. Try and stand like that and think of something where it was a really horrible time in your life. You'll find that as soon as you go to that thought, your body's going to change, your shoulders are going to drop and everything else. And if you do that test, also do it the other way. You know, while you're in that slump position, think of something that was really fantastic in your life that you love doing and everything else. So to make sure that you finish that little exercise feeling happy, because I don't want you staying in a sad state when you try it. But you'll notice that whatever we feel and whatever we're thinking is going to come out in our, as I say, our neurology is connected to our physiology. So whatever's going on inside our head is going to be shown in our body, in our expressions, in our body language. And over time, it will start to appear in our facial features as well. So someone who frowns a lot, they used to be happy, the little corner of the mouth will turn up normally. But when they're frowning and they're unhappy and they're got that sad look on their face repetitively, these muscles down the bottom here will get stronger and drag the corner of the mouth down. So at rest, the little corner of the mouth will go down. And so you know that that person is unhappy a lot, and they're more likely to be pessimistic about things than optimistic. And so with that, you've got that facial expression, you've got the facial feature I just reported on them, but you've also got the body language. So you look for all of this, and when you're talking to them, you start to get feedback. As I say, you've got two ears and two eyes, and the two eyes will give you more information than the two ears. And then use your voice to ask the right sort of questions. Show them that you're really interested in helping. You're not looking to find issues with them, but you're looking to understand what they're going through, that they're not on their own.
Okay, so in total, there are three ways we can understand that the other person has some mental health issues. The first one is seeing their visual appearance. The second one is like their expressions.
The body.
And the third one is their body language. So we can wrap the topic now. Okay, we're not wrapping it, but I want to go deep into you. And I want to ask you, so was there any point in your life when you thought that you have to change and change for good?
I think there's been, as I mentioned before, there was growing up without my dad, you know, not having a male role model. One of my uncles told my fiance at our wedding or our engagement party that she could do better than me. So I grew up with all that all the way through my life, not being good enough. So I spent most of my life trying to prove to everybody that I was good enough. And I finally woke up to that in my later 40s. I realized that that was a total waste of time trying to live my life for other people. I had to live it for myself. But the major one was around about the 1999, early 2000s. I'd married for a second time, short marriage, and I went through a divorce. And we're going through that divorce. I thought, I've been learning a lot of other modalities, you know, how to read body language, profiling people as far as understanding their personalities by asking questions and things like that. But realized I still didn't have enough information. And that's about early 2000s. I started looking for alternatives. And by about 2008, I'd found the ability of being able to read faces, body language and expressions that changed everything for me. But for me, it's like some people say, oh, I was going through life, everything was fine, and this one event happened. Well, in my case, it was just little events all the way through that kept nudging me and nudging me into a certain direction. But the one that really dropped me was that second divorce. That's where I thought, things have got to change. I thought, you know, I knew our marriage wasn't that great, but I thought we could work through it. It didn't work out that way. And these things will happen to all of us. There'll be a lot of people who are listening to this will say, yep, I've had a similar experience. Or they'll reflect back on what they've done in their past and what they've been through. And they'll realize that there might have been multiple triggers or there might have been one trigger.
I think many people can relate to that. And if let's say someone doesn't have a role model in their life at this point, so what he or she should do at the moment?
Well, you mean you got someone who you recognize has got mental health issues? Is that what you're asking? Well, one of the things is there's a lot of information out there floating around the internet. There's a lot of self-help books, etc. The world's inundated with that sort of information. The biggest problem is trying to find one that, you know, finding ones that are really good. This is, as I said, why we started the Campfire Project. So it was a focal point or a central point where people could come together. But, you know, if you're going to find somebody to guide you through things, it's like in business, if we get a coach to help us with sales, we get one who's had a lot of experience with selling. If we're looking at getting somebody to help us with building our teams, we find a coach who has great success at building teams. I always look for, if I'm talking to a coach, I'll go, what have you been through? You know, I've got this in my life. I need to sort this out in my business, my personal life, or whatever it might be. And I'll say to the coach, have you been through a similar experience? Tell me about your experience. What did you do? How did you get there? How did you get the results to get through the other side? So by asking people questions, finding out who has the skills, and then once you've got that together, then you know you've got someone you can trust. And that's why with the campfire project, I've just said to everybody, look, come in and join, sit in the background. You don't have to get actively involved. Sit there quietly, have a listen to the one-on-ones. When people come in, like we've got lots of coaches have come in, and what I did there was to make sure that they have to tell their story. Why are they doing what they're doing today? How is it that they are good at helping people? What have they been through? And so the people who come in and just listen to that can hear all those stories and then work out for themselves, oh, this coach over there, you know, I resonate with them. I understand. I'm sure that they'll understand me. So now they've got someone they can, sort of a warm introduction. They go, right, now that person might be able to give me some advice. And everybody in the Campfire Project is there to help each other. And so anybody puts their hand up, has a word to somebody and says, look, I need some help. Can you help me? There wouldn't be one person in there who would say no. Everyone would say yes. How can I help you? And they'll come from that place of compassion because they've all been through something at one point or another. We all know that we all have a different story, but we all have similar emotions. We feel similar things, no matter what gender or what nationality we are or what culture we come from. There is a common connection there. And so coming in and listening to people like that gives good direction on what you can do. And you don't, as I said, you don't have to get active. You just sit there and take your time. And when you're ready, you know, you approach the person that you think can help you, and you build a network around you that way.
Okay. How can people join the Campfire Project?
Well, if they go onto Facebook and they just do a search on the name Campfire, the Campfire Project. When I first put it up, one of the issues was to get the name Campfire as one word. That already been grabbed by somebody. So if you just do a search on the Campfire, Campfire is two words and project, you'll find it. Or the other way is to just do a search on me on the Campfire Facebook. Look for Alan Stevens. You know, they know what my face looks like now. They find me, and they'll find the Campfire Project through there as well. But I'll give you a link for your show notes. You can put that in there as well.
Okay, now let's say someone didn't, like, let's say someone had a role model, but he or she no longer considered him or her the role model anymore. And he or she doesn't want that role model traits in him. So what should the person do now? Should you look for another role model or what?
Then look for another one to do that. One of the things is, all my life I've had coaches, but I haven't had the same coach all the way through. I'll find a coach and a mentor and that to guide me through areas that I need at that time. The moment that either I find that they don't have the ability to do what I need, or we've completed that, then there's going to be another issue in my life and I get to go and find a new coach. That's why I'm forever on the search for new people. That's why having the Campfire Project and all those people coming in, I got a good understanding of them. We've had over 270 one-on-one interviews, and a lot of those people are coaches. So there's no shortage of mentors that I can draw on. But I always say, like, what you need, find the coach that can service at the time. The moment the coach no longer services that need and your need has changed or whatever, find a new coach that services that need. And every coach knows that their job is to make themselves redundant. They're there to help you through whatever you're going through as fast as you possibly can, effectively, and then get out of the way so that you can then continue moving forward. And of course, if you're moving forward and you're living life, there's always going to be new things coming up. That's one thing that's guaranteed. If you're living your life, getting out there, there's always going to be new issues coming up, and therefore you're going to be needing new coaches and new mentors as you go along. They'll be ready to change them, and the coaches know that that's what's going to happen, and that's what they're working towards, helping you through the issue that you've come to them. And after that, then they will even help you find the next coach that you need with the new issues that you've got.
Okay, this question is something that I always ask. So what is learning and education to you?
Learning is, I always look at it and go, right, I can read books and get a lot of knowledge. But learning is all about really whatever I'm taking in, how am I applying it? How am I using that? To what benefit am I to other people? I look at everything and go, right, everything you do for yourself dies with each of us. But what we do for each other and for the community isn't always will be eternal. So for me, education is an ongoing process of learning and sharing. So as I learn something new, once I understand that new learning, I then share it with other people. Education is something that's always growing and should always be shared.
Tell us now, so how can people can find you online?
Well, best place to find me online is my website, which is my name, alanstevens.com.au. And it's Alan with one A-L-A-N and Stevens, S-T-E-V-E-N-S.com.au. They can find me online there. And I always say to people, go to the success stories tab. And there's about six different areas that are focused in there. In business, education, raising children, PTSD, and other areas where you can go in and listen to what people have been through, what they've found, and how they've applied it to find solutions in their life. So that gives you a good place to not only find me, but also find out more about what I do and how it helps people and the community.
So what is the last word? Or last words you'd like to share with our audience?
Well, one thing I always like to share with people is I heard this from a coach in America from the UCLA college. As he said, the most important thing you'll ever learn is the next thing you learn after you think you know everything. So by that, I realized that education is an ongoing process. Everything that if I think I know everything, then it won't be long before I know nothing because everybody else will be passing me by. What we've talked about today, anything that's there, reach out, test things out. No matter what people tell you about anything, yes, it sounds interesting. Great, that's really good. Keep an open mind on everything that's presented to you, but then also go out and check everything that you're told. So research it. So if somebody's going through mental health issues at the moment, yep, as I said, come into the campfire and check it out. And the emphasis on check it out. Don't just take anything on gospel. Don't rush into everything. But take a little bit of time to assess things. But always keep that open mind to always move forward.
I think that's a really great suggestion for everyone.
Well, it's the one thing I learned all the way through. If I had stopped learning, number one, if I hadn't kept an open mind, I certainly wouldn't be living the life that I'm living now, which I really enjoy, and I wouldn't be doing the things that I'm doing now, which I really love. So I am everything. And by the way, every trial and tribulation I've been through, all the tough times, have made me who I am today. So in everything that's happened to me in the past, yes, at the time, though, some of them were horrible. There are upsides and downsides to everything. Remember that depends on how you choose to see things as to what the outcomes will be. If you see everything as being terrible, then everything in life will be terrible. But if you can find the positive in anything that's happening to you, as ridiculous as it may sound, it will change your life. So look for the positive in everything and see how you can then move forward from there.
So how can a person change the wordings
that
they use to describe themselves? Let's say someone is like, not is, but let's say someone has been using negative words to describe themselves for a pretty long time. So now what can do?
If you're always focusing on the negative,
do now.
You're going
to
have negative thoughts.
Basically,
every thought we
get
have,
better
every emotion we feel creates a chemical reaction in the body. And so, like, Yeah, we have a thought to lift our hand. What we actually do, we send an electric signal from our head to our hand to move the muscles, etc., from our brain. The end result is that all of that is chemically induced. It's from our thoughts. So if we have negative thoughts, we're going to have negative chemicals. Those negative chemicals will eat the organs of the body, whereas positive thoughts will feed the organs of the body. So if you want to improve your physical health, people who have been really depressed and everything else who have had cancers, we've found a lot of people have reversed their cancers by smiling a lot, laughing more. So getting away, turn the news off for a starter. Stop watching TV where it's all the doom and gloom, but start looking for comedies, look at being happy about things. That changes our attitude. And once we start realizing that, I'll give you an example. My first wife, when she left me, I had three boys to raise on my own. It was virtually when she left, it was like telling me I wasn't good enough to be a husband. I wasn't good enough to be a provider. Now, I realized over time that if my boys didn't respect their mother, then they would have broken relationships like I did. So I had to create a relationship with her. And the best way I could do that was instead of looking at all the negative side of the relationship, I looked for the positive side. What positive things did she bring into the marriage, into the union that she and I had? And that was three boys that I love and respect. If it hadn't have been for us being together, I wouldn't have the sons I've got today. So I chose by just looking and going, right, the positive side of our relationship was the sons that I have. And therefore, my attitude to her changed like the click of the fingers. When my second wife left, I was unhappy about that. But then I also realized, I heard later on that many years later, she'd found a gentleman who she's really happy with. She's having a great life. And I've all of a sudden had a very warm feeling inside me. I was really happy for her because I then realized that I did really care for her. And the best way, if you really love somebody, you want the best for them. And she was now with somebody she was really happy with. I was able to go fantastic, as opposed to going, oh, I'm here on my own and she's out there happy with a partner and being miserable about it. I chose to be happy about it. And I found that, my energy, everything just lifted up. So it's a matter of choice. It can be difficult to spend all of our life being depressed about things, but it's like anything. It's like as a child learning how to walk. We get up, we fall down. We get up, we fall down. The more you practice it, the sooner or later you're going to be good at it. You have to repeatedly lift move a muscle to build the muscle. So it may take a bit of effort, but think of it, you're either going to have that really miserable life for the rest of your time, or do you want to have that positive life? Well, keep your focus on the positive life and just keep practicing until you move closer and closer to it. And eventually your thoughts will change to a positive arrangement. And from there, physical and mental health improves immediately.
I really like the way you describe the mental health, or like using the right words, as a muscle, and that's something we have to build. So we have to constantly work on ourselves to develop that strength to describe ourselves positively and look up for ourselves.
That's it.
And yeah.
Yeah, because if you think about it, your brain is a muscle, isn't it? And so with that, every thought you have, you're creating new synaptic connections, the same as lifting a weight and breaking down the fibers and the fibers regenerating. That's how we build a muscle, by breaking it down. So the same thing with the mind. Depends on how we think about things as to how we create those new synaptic connections. Are they going to be the sort of connections we want? Are we going to end up with that muscle between our ears that is the way we want it to be?
Okay, so this is the end of today's episode. So now we talk a lot about mental health and how we can work on developing ourselves, and we also talked about his campfire project that he's working on. So make sure to check that out as well and check him out. His name is again Alan Stevens. And he'll again be back with us with in another episode, this where we will talk about different profiles. Until that time, if you enjoy this today's, like not this, but like in today's episode, make sure to subscribe to this podcast. And also, if you're on Apple Podcasts, make sure to leave a review. I'll highly appreciate it. And that's for today. Until next time, stay great.